You know the old joke about how if somebody wasn't paying as good of attention to the sermon as they ought to, and somebody later asked them, well, what did the preacher preach about? And you just say sin, thinking that, you know, that's probably going to hopefully be right, at least be pretty close. Well, if you answer sin today, you will be right. Somebody asked you, what did the preacher preach about? We are going to talk about sin. And I want to ask, I guess, about the most basic question in the world regarding sin. Is it wrong to commit sin? Well, sure it is. I hope nobody is going to answer any differently than that. It is wrong to commit sin. But it's not only wrong, it's also crazy. It's not very smart to commit sin, is it? Let me give you an example. This one is very well known here at this present time. Tiger Woods. You've been under a rock if you haven't heard something about all of that here over the last few months. What he did was wrong. But also what he did was dumb. He was crazy. He was really out of his mind. He had taken leave of his senses to do what he did. If anybody here, let's forget about Tiger Woods, if anybody here ever commits adultery against their spouse, the same thing can be said of you. It will be wrong, but it will also be one of the dumbest things that you could possibly do. Assuming that your senses have been properly trained, and I really feel like that could be said of just about everyone here today. You've been taught, your mind has been instructed on this subject. And so if you go out and you do something like that, you're going to have to actually be out of your mind. Again, your senses will have left you if you do something of that nature. Let's talk about something maybe not quite as, quote, extreme as that. Is it wrong to miss services? Is it wrong to forsake the assembling of ourselves together? Yes. Hebrews 10:25 says so. It's wrong. But also, it's not very smart. Think about everything that you know in regard to worship services. Everything that is said about it. In regard to the worship that we offer to God, the need to honor and glorify Him, in terms of the edification that we receive from it. When you look at every aspect of this worship and what all God intended for it to accomplish, it's just really crazy to miss it. It's just not, it doesn't make any sense to miss services when you know how much good it does for you. Really, all of that is to introduce the subject for this morning's lesson, and that is the insanity of sin. The insanity of sin. That's the aspect of it that we want to focus on today. Not just the fact that it's wrong, but that it's insane to commit sin. It's not sane. It's not sensible to commit sin. That's really going to be the focus of our lesson today. And let's introduce that by looking at a passage in Ecclesiastes, the 9th chapter. In verse 3, you can turn to it or you can read it up here on the screen. Ecclesiastes 9:3 says, "Truly, the hearts of the sons of men are full of evil. Madness is in their hearts while they live. And after that, they go to the dead." Those who are set on doing evil, it says that madness is in their hearts. And so we could change the title and say the madness of sin or the insanity of sin. Either one would really fit what we're talking about today. But let's look at a couple of other passages to illustrate this point right here. And that is that sinners are indeed out of their mind. And that's basically the idea of insanity, isn't it? Sinners really are out of their mind. Turn to Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians chapter 4. And I want to kind of read this passage in reverse. I want us to look at the lifestyle, first of all, that's described in verse 19. And then we'll go back and look at the reason why. Ephesians 4, verse 19 says, "Who being past feeling, have given themselves over to lewdness, to work all uncleanness with greediness." Now that's the lifestyle. Now let's start back up in verse 17 now and read up to that point. "This I say, therefore, and testify in the Lord, that you should no longer walk as the rest of the Gentiles walk, in the futility of their mind, having their understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them, because of the blindness of their heart." You know, when you look there in the middle of verse 18 and you see the ignorance that is in them, you might want to go ahead and just excuse them right off the bat. Well, they just didn't know any better. But there's a little bit more said to kind of complete the picture there, isn't it? Because of the blindness of their hearts. They could have seen, but refused to see. You see how much emphasis is put on the mind here in this passage? Their minds weren't right. They were out of their minds. They weren't thinking clearly. And that's the reason they were behaving in the manner that they were. I want us to compare a couple of other passages on this particular subject as well. Turn to Luke chapter 8. Luke chapter 8. And we're going to read about a man here that was possessed by a demon. And at first you may wonder, well, now, what exactly does this have to do with us today? Because I believe, as I'm sure you do believe, that demon possession was something that happened during the time of Jesus and of His apostles at a time when they had the power to cast them out. I do not believe that such is occurring today. But I want us to read this passage and then compare it with a passage later on in the New Testament. Luke chapter 8. Let's begin in verse 26. "Then they sailed to the country of the Gadarenes, which is opposite Galilee. And when he stepped out on the land, there met him a certain man from the city who had demons for a long time. And he wore no clothes, nor did he live in a house, but in the tombs. When he saw Jesus, he cried out, fell down before him, and with a loud voice said, 'What have I to do with you, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I beg you, do not torment me.' For he had commanded the unclean spirit to come out of the man. For it had often seized him and was kept under guard, bound with chains and shackles, and he broke the bonds and was driven by the demon into the wilderness. Jesus asked him, saying, 'What is your name?' And he said, 'Legion,' because many demons had entered him. And they begged him that he would not command them to go out into the abyss. Now a herd of many swine was feeding there on the mountain. So they begged him that he would permit them to enter them. And he permitted them. Then the demons went out of the man and entered the swine. And the herd ran violently down the steep place into the lake and drowned. When those who fed them saw what had happened, they fled and told it in the city and in the country. Then they went out to see what had happened and came to Jesus and found the man from whom the demons had departed, sitting at the feet of Jesus, clothed and in his right mind. And they were afraid." Now, the simple point that I want to make from this is what's certainly implied in verse 35 is that when he was possessed by these demons, he was not in his right mind, right? During the time that the devil, that these demons had taken up residence within him, he was not in his right mind. Now, I want you to compare that to what's said over in 2 Timothy chapter 2. 2 Timothy chapter 2. Now again, we're not saying that demon possession is something that still occurs today. I believe the devil works in different ways, certainly today, but just read with me these verses and you'll see the connection. 2 Timothy 2, beginning in verse 24. And a servant of the Lord must not quarrel, but be gentle to all, able to teach, patient. In humility, correcting those who are in opposition, if God perhaps will grant them repentance, so that they may know the truth, and that they may come to their senses and escape the snare of the devil, having been taken captive by him to do his will. You see the point? While you are held captive by Satan, and while you are doing his will, you are not in your right mind. Because here he says that when you get someone to repent, basically what you're getting them to do is to come to their senses. To finally be in the right frame of mind. And so when you're living in sin, you're doing the wrong thing, but you're also doing the crazy thing. It doesn't make any sense. You're out of your mind, really. We're not just saying that figuratively, you're really out of your mind when you commit sin. And that's the message that the Lord wants us to understand. I want us now to consider some insane decisions that were made by a couple of different Bible characters. Let's first of all go all the way back to the beginning. Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve. Again, we may have done the same thing under the same circumstances. In fact, we have done the same thing in the same circumstances too many times. Not exactly the same situation, but you know what I'm talking about. In principle, we've done the same thing. But still, what they did was dumb. Genesis chapter 3, look beginning with verse 1. Now the serpent was more cunning than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made. And he said to the woman, has God indeed said, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden? And the woman said to the serpent, we may eat the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat it, nor shall you touch it, lest you die. Then the serpent said to the woman, you will not surely die. For God knows that in the day you eat of it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. So when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, that it was pleasant to the eyes and a tree desirable to make one wise, she took of its fruit and ate. She also gave to her husband with her, and he ate. Now again, I'm not just trying to pick on Adam and Eve because we've done similar things to that ourselves. We've acted the same way. But now, why was this so dumb? Well, look at what God had done for them. Look at the gracious provisions that He had made for Adam and Eve. He puts them in this luscious garden. And it's just hard for us to imagine just how wonderful that place was. Now, we get a pretty good idea from the way it's described here in the Scriptures. Put them in this luscious garden. They've got everything that their hearts could imagine. And they're really told that they can have everything. You can partake of everything in this entire place, except this one tree. And the devil gets in there and he weaves this little fancy argument and he gets them thinking in a way that they ought not to be thinking, and all of a sudden now he's got them talked into it. They took a leave of their senses, didn't they? Should have been thinking more clearly than that. And how many times can we say the same thing? We get through doing something that we know we weren't supposed to do, Have you ever said to yourself, what in the world was I thinking? What was I thinking? Why did I do that? I know better than that. You do know better than that. We just got to get to the point where the clear-headed decisions become more frequent than decisions like this. We've got to learn better than this. And we'll talk about some clear-headed decisions here in just a moment. But let's look at another really insane decision. And this comes to us in the parable of the prodigal son. Look in Luke chapter 15. I'm sure you're very familiar with it, but let's go back and read at least a few of the verses there. Luke chapter 15. Beginning with verse 11. Then he said, a certain man had two sons. And the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of goods that falls to me. So he divided to them his livelihood. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together, journeyed to a far country, and there wasted his possessions with prodigal living. Now again, you know the story. He eventually makes it back to his father's home. But I want you to notice, let's skip down to verse 31. Because I want you to notice what he says to this prodigal son's brother, to the other son. You remember he kind of complained about all this to-do they were making over him when he returned? Look at the statement made in verse 31 to him. So he said to him, Son, you are always with me, and all that I have is yours. Think about that not only from the parable standpoint here, but think about that from a spiritual standpoint. You're in the Father's house, and the promise is what? All that I have is yours. Well, it seems that the prodigal son forgot that for a while, but he did remember it eventually. Look in verse 17. But when he came to himself, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have bread enough and to spare, and I perish with hunger. Well, I sure did have it pretty good back there. I mean, the servants back in my father's house, they got it better than I do now. What was I thinking? I'm going to go back to where I should have stayed in the first place. Now, there may be some of you here today who really not spending enough time in the Father's house. Maybe it's a situation where you're kind of straddling the fence. You know, you got the world over here and you got your Father's house, and you're really trying to kind of have your part in both. And you realize how much you're giving up. All things that I have are yours, but you're not, right now, you're not satisfied. Here the Father is saying that everything I've got is yours. And evidently, you're not satisfied with what our eternal, all-powerful, Heavenly Father can give you. I know that because you're still dabbling out here. You're wanting to have some fun out here. Does that make sense to you? What God gives is insufficient. The pleasure that I can derive from Him, the blessings that I receive from Him, that's not sufficient. I've got to have this over. That's not right. That's not thinking very clearly. That's really insane if you think about it. Some of you may get the temptation at some point to leave the Father's house. Maybe you're securely in the Father's house right now, serving Him faithfully. There may come that time when you're tempted to leave. Now, go ahead and say to yourself right now, if I ever do that, that will be the stupidest thing that I've ever done. Go ahead and tell yourself that right now. Because you know it. You know what the facts are. All that I have are yours. I want to look at another passage with you in connection with that. Turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 3. You remember the problem there in Corinth? They were dividing up into these different groups, different sects. You know, I'm of Paul, I'm of Apollos, and I'm of Cephas, and really, the first four chapters are devoted to exposing just how bad a problem that is and what all was wrong with that. But there's a great point made at the end of chapter 3. Look beginning in verse 21. 1 Corinthians 3, beginning with verse 21. Therefore, let no one boast in men, for all things are yours. Whether Paul or Apollos or Cephas or the world or life or death or things present or things to come, all are yours. Then you are Christ and Christ is God's. You see what he's trying to tell them there? You're walking around saying, I am of Apollos. Great. Well, that's smart. Kind of cut yourself off from some things, didn't you? I am of Apollos. You get in that one little small group over here. Not as much there, is there? But when you belong to Christ and belong to Christ alone, that opens up everything for you. All things are yours. And so, again, stay in the Father's house and be faithful to Him. That is most certainly the smart thing to do. But now let's look at some clear-headed decisions that were made by a couple of different people. First of all, let's look at a very clear-headed decision made by Joseph. Genesis chapter 39. Genesis 39. And let's begin with verse 7. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph, and she said, Lie with me. But he refused and said to his master's wife, Look, my master does not know what is with me in the house, and he has committed all that he has to my hand. There is no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? That's a smart man right there. A smart, convicted man who's got his head on straight, who knows that what he's being asked to do is wrong, and he knows all the reasons that it's wrong, and he's just not about to do it. I'm not going to do something crazy like that. That was a conviction that Joseph had. Another clear-headed decision was made by Moses. We know some from the Old Testament study, but I want us to look at Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11. You look beginning in verse 24. Hebrews 11, beginning in verse 24. By faith Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin. Now, to the world, that would have looked like a crazy decision, right? Well, not so crazy. Because he esteemed the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt. For he looked to the reward. I tell you, what I've got waiting on me amounts to a whole lot more than these treasures here. Now again, from a worldly perspective, people just kind of looking on from the outside might have thought, well, he's lost his mind. No, just the opposite. He would have lost his mind if he had decided to stay there in that Egyptian household. He made the right decision. He made a smart decision. Now, in this idea of people kind of thinking you're crazy sometimes, when you make the right spiritual decision, that kind of leads into my next point, and that is don't be discouraged when others think you're crazy. When you know you're doing the right thing, the smart thing in the sight of God, don't be discouraged if some others see it a little bit differently than that. You remember Festus, when Paul preached there before him and Agrippa? Festus said, "Paul, much learning has driven you mad." What you're talking about, you just sound crazy. Do you remember Paul's response? Now, he was polite. Keep that in mind. He was polite. He said, "I am not mad, most noble Festus, but I speak the words of truth and reason." I speak the words of truth and reason. It's true and it makes sense. It's smart. It's sensible what I'm talking to you about. Don't be discouraged. There will be people who will say maybe not exactly what Festus said, but something along that same line. They're going to think you're out of your head. But you're not. You're thinking clearly spiritually. And that's more important than anything else. Look also in 1 Peter chapter 4. 1 Peter chapter 4, this kind of makes the same point here. 1 Peter 4, beginning in verse 3. "For we have spent enough of our past lifetime in doing the will of the Gentiles, when we walked in lewdness, lust, drunkenness, revelries, drinking parties, and abominable idolatries. In regard to these, they think it strange that you do not run with them in the same flood of dissipation, speaking evil of you." Why won't you do some of these things we're doing? That doesn't make any sense to me. Why you won't come and participate in some of these same things? Well, the fact is it doesn't make any sense to participate in those things when you understand what they're truly all about. The world paints one picture of them, and that's all the picture they see many times. Now, we've got a totally different picture. God has kind of uncovered all that for us, and He's shown us the weakness of all that. He's shown us where all that leads and where it's headed and what it does to us and all of that. God's laid it all bare for us to see. And the reason why God lays all that out for us is because He wants us to have all the information available to make a clear-headed decision, to make the right decision. There's one final point we want to make before I leave the lesson with you, and that is that every person will eventually come to his or her senses. Luke chapter 16. Luke chapter 16, going to the story here of the rich man and Lazarus. We won't read all of this, but I do want us to read verses 23 through 28, because the rich man did come to his senses, didn't he? The only thing is, it was just a little bit too late. "And being in torments in Hades, he lifted up his eyes and saw Abraham afar off and Lazarus in his bosom. And he cried and said, 'Father Abraham, have mercy on me and send Lazarus that he may dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am tormented in this flame.' But Abraham said, 'Son, remember that in your lifetime you received your good things and likewise Lazarus' evil things. But now he is comforted and you are tormented. And besides all this, between us and you there is a great gulf fixed, so that those who want to pass from here to you cannot, nor can those from there pass to us. Then he said, 'I beg you therefore, Father, that you would send him to my father's house, for I have five brothers, that he may testify to them, lest they also come to this place of torment.'" I know now. I know now. If somebody could just go and tell my brothers. He came to his senses, but it was too late. And so let's remember that every one of us will eventually come to our senses. Now, if you haven't yet, don't be bargaining too much on a whole lot more time. What's going to make all the difference in the world, obviously, is whether we come to our senses now. Now. If you're outside of Christ this morning, if you're of an accountable age and have not yet obeyed the gospel, Don't wait too late to come to your senses. Today would be a good time. There may be some of you here who need to make things right with the Lord. Maybe you have obeyed the gospel in the past, but you haven't been obedient to the gospel like you ought to for some time. Maybe this lesson this morning has helped you to come to your senses. But don't put off doing what you know that you need to do. We can help you in any way with your spiritual needs this morning. So please come as we stand and sing.